This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. It's the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com. The NFL wire site from the USA Today group. With me on this show, as always, is my co-host Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And this is episode 207, and this is one of the most interesting episodes that we're going to have in quite some time. Because the truth is, we don't even need to talk about much about the game, which was a disaster, a 45-10 demolishing, just disgusting, perhaps... Since the Seattle game that essentially got Ken Whisenhunt fired, we haven't seen a game that bad. Maybe the Seattle game at the end of 2015 when the Cardinals had everything wrapped up. But pretty much this is one of the worst games we've ever seen the Cardinals play. And we don't have to talk about it much because there's so much else going on. Seth, what is happening with the Cardinals? What is happening? We have Mike McCoy getting fired, which everyone has anticipated. Byron Leftwich takes over. Steve Wilks is saying that the problem with the defense is not has nothing to do with scheme whatsoever. Now, after the trade rumors that we debunked as being absolutely ridiculous, saying the Cardinals are taking calls or shopping Patrick Peterson, now Patrick Peterson is the one who has requested a trade. What has happened to our team?
It's clear that the wheels have come off the Arizona Cardinals bus at this point, and we're now into a time and a place where we've done this podcast for what, 4 years now?
Five years
now, and during our time as podcast co-host, we've never, ever dealt with anything like this. I mean, we started as the Bruce Arians era began, but we didn't really have to worry about them being awful. And we're to the point now where we can genuinely say that the Arizona Cardinals are an awful football team at this point. And now the wheels have virtually come off the bus.
It's everything that could have gone wrong this year has gone wrong. Everything. They've had injuries. They had their veteran quarterback who's never been bad in his career, and he was horrifically bad. They haven't gotten production out of David Johnson. They haven't gotten production out of Larry Fitzgerald. The defense went from good to atrocious.
And now you're to the point where your best defensive player in Patrick Peterson is saying, hey, I want out. I'm done. My era in Arizona is over. I've had enough. Send me somewhere else. And it's devastating for the fans because this is not what anybody wanted, obviously, but this is not what anybody thought would happen. And now the Cardinals are, you know, on the cusp of falling back into the obscurity of being the Arizona Cardinals again.
Yeah, yes. And so that's what we're going to talk about in this show. We're going to talk about Patrick Peterson and his desires. So we'll talk about all the angles about a potential trade. We're going to talk about the big, which was, it was the big stuff. And we're going to base the entire podcast on was, hey, Mike McCoy was fired. And now Byron Leftwich takes over as offensive coordinator. What can we expect? We'll talk about that, but after Patrick Peterson. And then you know, there's a football game this Sunday against the 49ers, where if you're being, like, if you're the most if you're being reasonable, and I'm not always reasonable when it comes to what my hopes are for the Cardinals, but you look at the rest of the schedule, this is one of the two winnable games left on their schedule, like based on how things are going right now. So we'll look at that and kind of the outlook looking moving forward and some comments that Steve Wilks has made about the offense, about the defense, things going in that nature. So let's start with that. Let's start with Patrick Peterson. I can tell you, I couldn't believe it. I was actually, it was during a class that I was teaching, and I saw the tweet, and it was almost a verbal thing I shouldn't say out loud. Because, you know, if everything that's happened this season, there really, that was the absolute worst thing, aside from a real mutiny in the locker room. And at that point, we really didn't know at the initial report. We really didn't know what the situation was around Patrick Peterson, but to have one of their most popular players say he wants out, that's like the worst thing could have happened right now, because okay, things are bad. Now we're changing a coach. Maybe things will look up. Nope. Never mind. Now Patrick Peterson wants out. So what was your reaction to the initial report from Adam Schefter? Because here's the thing for me, when you see a report from Adam Schefter, this is much different than that Jason LaConfora report that we heard that the Cardinals are considering trading him. When you see a report from Schefter, you know, oh, this is real.
Yeah, it's real, and it's unfortunate, because out of all the negatives that we've talked about on this show this year, and there's been a lot, let's be honest. One of the positives week in and week out has been the play of Patrick Peterson and how we've complimented his faith and willingness to, you know, really buy into this scheme and be a guy that, you know, turned over a new leaf and became physical and, you know, wasn't following the number one receiver and everything. And now you look at it, and it's obviously it wasn't that he didn't buy in. It wasn't any of that. It was that he wanted to see how it would work out, what would happen. And it's obvious that it didn't work out in his eyes. Well, it hasn't worked out at all. And he's done trying to put this team on his back and carry him, and he wants a chance to, you know, be on a great team while he's still in his prime, and those are all fair things. I mean, he's 28 years old. He is, by the standards of the NFL, underpaid for his performance level, and it now means that he needs, you know, a chance to go somewhere and win, that Arizona just, he doesn't see it being on the horizon for this team and this organization.
And you know, there is a level of this and the wording, and we talked about this off the air, the wording of what we heard, what we saw from the Schefter report, and this is from people close to Peterson, is that he desperately wants out. And everything that we've heard from Peterson publicly has been complete. I mean, he's a team captain. He has been 100% supportive of the new Cardinals defense. In fact, we can go back to the very beginning, you know, when it was kind of announced that it was going to be a 4-3 people. And that's really been an issue all year for fans. Patrick Peterson said from day one, I thought we always should have been a 4-3. I love how this defense is schemed. I'm going to do more things than I have in the four. So I'm going to be engaged. I'm going to be excited. I'm going to make plays. We're going to play fast. We're going to play physical. We're not going to have to think as much. He's been completely supportive of Wilks and so this seems to come out of nowhere, but I bet, you know, cause he's said for a few years, he wants to win. And I think the realization came that this isn't going to turn around as quickly. Though, let's be honest, this thing could turn around within a year. It very well could. But that's another conversation. which you, like you said before the show, when you say desperately wants out, that's not something that happens suddenly unless there's something bad that happens. And based on local reports here from John Gamador on the radio, who's had conversations with players and people close to Peterson, namely, you know, he all but said it, Tyrann Mathieu, that Peterson doesn't have an issue with the coaching. He doesn't have an issue with the scheme. He doesn't have an issue even necessarily with specific players or teammates. It's more just the overall situation. He doesn't want to go through another rebuild, even though, let's be honest, he didn't really go through. So he was a rookie in 2011. They went 8-8. 2012 was a disaster, and things turned around in a hurry after that. And it's, he's getting impatient, but probably those thoughts crept in with Bruce and Carson when they retired in January.
Yeah, and it probably started the thing here, and it's, you know, it's kind of what we talked about. It's one of those situations where, and you and I have discussed this, and we discussed this off the air, and it's probably something you and I, if we're being fair and honest, we probably should have discussed and looked at more, and that is, what happens if the Cardinals were bad? And that was not anything that we really looked at. Like, everything we looked at was – probably what helped Patrick buy in at the beginning to what Steve Wilks was selling is like, hey, we've got, look at this. I mean, the only concern we had on the offensive line outside of staying healthy was, you know, I'm not a huge fan of the Andre Smith signing, but they want to run the ball and he still seems like he's pretty good in run blocking. So, you know, you can talk me into it, you know, not a huge fan of the fact that they don't have much at wide receiver, but, you know, they're going to run the ball a lot. So, you know, they just need Fitz to kind of help them move the chains, J.J. Nelson and Christian Kirk to make some big plays every once in a while, and it'll be okay. And then on the defensive side of the ball, it's like, oh, they're going to a 4-3. That's going to play into, you know, they're getting guys like Al Holcomb and Steve Wilks who helped coach up, you know, Thomas Davis and Shaq Thompson and obviously Luke Kuechly and was around those guys. So that'll help, you know, Deion Buchanan play that Thomas Davis role in the, or that Shaq Thompson role. And then, you know, Hassan Reddick taking over the Thomas Davis role and all of that. And it's like, oh, but they're not Thomas Davis and Shaq Thompson and Luke Kuechly. They're Hassan Reddick and Deion Buchanan and Josh Mines. And, you know, it's the same thing. You know, Corey Peters has been very, very good, but he's very good for Corey Peters. He's not star Lotu Lele. You know, Robert Kimdiche's had his best season as a pro, and I wouldn't even say he's approaching the level of play that you saw from a guy like who's their under tackle there. I can't remember his name, but you know, so you look at all these things and we still are finding positives, but the reality is we never saw, or we never really went over the fact of like, hey, what happens if Deion Buchanan and Hassan Reddick can't play in this defense? You know, what happens if Robert Kimdiche is not disciplined enough and he's only kind of a one-dimensional player on this defense? You know, what happens if the offensive line that's been bad for years is still bad? And so all of those conversations, we kind of brushed over them, but we never really dove deep into, hey, this could be a bad team if these things go wrong, because let's be honest, part of the perfect storm of this team being one of the worst, if not the worst in the NFL, has been that everything that could go wrong has.
And really, it started with Sam Bradford, because a guy who's really never been bad his entire career suddenly became atrocious. And that set off a sequence of events that was rough. Now, for me, the only question is, the only thing that I find odd, and especially what as a fan upsets me, is the report coming out a week before the deadline. Now, people who are fans of Phoenix sports will be very aware that this is something that has occurred regularly with the other teams in town, namely the Phoenix Suns, and they basically force their way out. And what is very interesting to see right now is, well, recording is always on a Tuesday evening. This, you'll probably get this on Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday evening, or Thursday Here's the thing. Patrick addresses, he speaks to reporters on Thursday. When he talks to them, like assuming he does, or does he skip it this week, you know, ducks out of what he normally would do. Does he double down? Does he himself say it? Or does he walk it back? There's not a lot of time. The trade deadline's on Tuesday. And when you leak that, you know, at hour, you know, it's not the 11th hour, but it's the 10th hour, almost the 11th hour. You're putting the team in a position where it's going to be very difficult to find something that's worth. Because really, what is a Hall of Fame trajectory player playing the best football in his career, in his prime, who's healthy and is on a reasonable contract for the next 2.5 years worth? There's no price that's worth that. I mean, what can you honestly get that's equal to that? You can't.
Right. And that's where the conundrum comes in. And you know, you've seen things floated. Daniel Jeremiah said it starts with 2 first-round picks. And you and I can have that conversation, but it's like, well, like, let's just throw a team out there. Like, it's the Philadelphia Eagles, right?
That first round pick's not worth that much.
Right. I mean, maybe this year you're hoping that the Eagles just stay middle of the pack and you end up with a, you know, pick in the 15 to 20 range. Okay, so maybe that's worth something. But then the next year you're assuming they're going to improve because they've got a, you know, a good team and a good quarterback and a strong team. You know, and they're down year, they're still what, a half game out of first place or a game out of first place in the NFC East. I mean, they're down year and Arizona's down years are completely different right now. And so it's like, okay, well, that, you know, do you really want 2 firsts from the Eagles? I mean, that's still a good return, but in the end, you're basically getting, you know, a mid first round pick and then a late first round pick. You know, today, one that was floated by ESPN that I actually don't mind as much is that the Cardinals get the Minnesota Vikings 2019 first round pick and third round pick, as well as cornerback Trey Waynes. And Trey Waynes is under contract in 2019 for his fifth year rookie option. So, you know, he's relatively cost controlled and the Cardinals have him for a year and can figure out if he fits the Steve Wilks defense, if Steve Wilks is still the coach in 2019. And now you have 2 first and 2 third-round picks. So that gives you some room to work with. I mean, but again, like that's like your baseline, right? If you're the Cardinals, I mean, I wrote about that today. Like if you're going to make a trade, a team has to come in and kind of floor you, right? Like it can't just be like, hey, here's a second and a fourth. We'll take an all pro cost controlled cornerback off your hands.
I can't remember who it was that tweeted it, but maybe it was Joel Corey, cap guy or national reporter. The truth is no conversation should even begin unless they at least do the Darrell Revis price, which is a first and a fourth. And even that, if you look at the scenario, Revis is coming off an injury. He was older. So it's got to be at least what you got for what they gave up for Darrell Revis back in the day. And here's the thing. The other part, I can consider trading Patrick Peterson after the season. I don't know. And this has kind of been the stance of the team. Steve Wilks said, nope, it's not happening. It's not even worth talking about. Michael Bidwell said, no, it's not happening. It really seems like the Cardinals are going to hold the line on this for the trade deadline. And honestly, I think that's wise because there's too much uncertainty in the middle of the season with those picks that you acquire with what's going to happen for the rest of the year. And here's the other thing. Who in the world's going to play cornerback for the Cardinals if Patrick Peterson is gone? Right. So that means that either put Jamar Taylor at number one and keep Benae Benwicker where he's at. But if you recall, Jamar Taylor got benched because he wasn't doing particularly well. Do you move Benae to the number one spot, which, you know, probably makes, which probably weakens his play overall. And you put Jamar at number two, where he was outplayed by Binet. And then guess what? On those super nickel, on those dime packages, guess who gets to come in now? Brandon Williams. Brandon Williams, yes.
Very, very good kick returner, Brandon Williams.
Stop it.
So, but, and that's why I said, like, if it happens and you get, like, if you can get a deal with the Vikings for Trey Waynes, at least you have a young cornerback that you can see if he fits your style of defense. Like, he doesn't fit Zimmer's defense particularly well. That's okay. I mean, we've seen, you know, guys move on and move around and end up doing well in other systems. You know, there's only so many Patrick Petersons in the NFL. There's only so many guys that are kind of scheme transcendent as corner talents, kind of like Chandler Jones as a edge player. Like, you know, he can play 3-4 outside linebacker. He can play 4-3 defensive end. It doesn't matter. Dude's going to get the sack numbers. Like, that's just his skill set. You know, Waynes isn't one of those guys, but maybe he fits into what Steve Wilks wants to do. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, that's the whole thing, is if you're going to make a trade, it has to involve multiple picks, including a day one pick, and a player that either that fixes something. Like, your offensive line is horrible, right? So if your offensive line is horrible, and just, you know, throwing a name out there again, like the Saints offer you, you know, Andres Pete and a 2020 first. Okay, like, that makes sense. Like, obviously you're not getting the 2019 first, but now you're getting a young offensive lineman that's actually had success in the NFL. Helps what you need, right? Like, okay, it'll fit one thing. Yeah, you're still going to be down Peterson, like you said, but at least you're fixing one. You're trying to fix one area of concern, because that's the biggest thing right now. And you've kind of hit on it. And so that's why I'm kind of not really open to a lot of the trade scenarios where you're just getting multiple first round picks, because first, and I mean this in the most, you know, sincere way possible, but like, are we really sure we want Steve Keim making those picks? Like, is that what we want? And then the other thing is, when you have multiple holes, you don't want to create new holes unless you are filling the other holes, right? So, like you said, if you trade Patrick Petersen, even if you were to get two, let's say, top 15 picks in the 2019 and 2020 NFL draft, that still means you're 2 years away before you're filling these holes. And including the one you just created by trading your best defensive player. So it's one of those kind of delicate situations that you have to navigate and figure out what's the best, not only for the player, but also for the team, not only in the short term, but the long term.
For me, the price that I go with to start, honestly, I want a first and a second this year, and then a day two, maybe a third or a fourth rounder the year after, if there's no other players involved. That way it's worth, I mean, that's a hefty price. But even then, I still don't do it now. I mean, basically I tell Patrick, you're captain, you can't do this. You know, I hope you can work with it. You've been practicing hard, but we're not trading you now. We'll address this in the off season, and maybe you're happier once we see the plan that we've got moving forward, because we've got our Josh Rosen. We have so much cap space next year. You know, you saw what the Rams did from 1 year to the next. We can do that too.
Yeah, when they were able to ignore the quarterback position and go kind of all in on the offensive line. And so again, that's the whole thing, is like, now it comes down to, and I think you tweeted out and wrote something really interesting, and that was that the biggest concern of this whole thing has been the fact that we haven't heard from Petersen.
Which tells you, hey, guess what? That means it's real.
Right. Not that he's, you know, always on Twitter and stuff like that, but the fact that he is not tweeted out, hey, not something to worry about, guys. I'm here for the, you know, I'm here for whatever happens, or, you know, stuff like that. Like, it's clear that this is something he's asked for. Now, when you start hearing words like desperately and maybe some hyperbole in those things, okay, maybe there is, maybe there is hyperbole to that to try to get the team to bend and not be too hesitant to make a move, right? Like, that's the thing, is the Cardinals have taken the, well, this isn't going to happen, so let's not even talk about it kind of idea. And if you start throwing in terms like desperately, or like, you know, if you start questioning whether or not he's going to be an issue in the locker room, you know, things like that, all of a sudden teams do get a little skittish, because they're like, ah, crap. Like, do we really want that problem? And that is a reality that they need, because Peterson is a veteran and a leader in the locker room.
And the other issue is, you know, maybe, and we talked about this before the show, is maybe this is something that he always knew was coming. And so he's had in the back of his mind, you know, what type of player does he want to be? Patrick Peterson wants to be a legendary player. If you look at
a Hall of Fame level player,
not just a Hall of Fame, but legendary. Let's take Deion Sanders. That's the type of player he looks to for what he does. And if you recall the career trajectory of Deion Sanders, when did he have his greatest years? He was great as an Atlanta Falcon, but it wasn't until he left to San Francisco and to Dallas that he became a special, like, league-wide star. And there's a level to this that I'm sure there has to be. Obviously, there's winning. Now, Pat, you know, Hall of Fame cornerbacks need to win championships. And as it is right now, Patrick Peterson is more of the, a little bit more high profile, but he's more of an Aeneas Williams, Cardinals fans will remember him, than he is a Deion Sanders. He is fantastic. He's great. And he wants to win, and he wants to be a star. And maybe he's realizing between the, now, if the Cardinals were on track to win right now or to win next year, maybe the brand or his star wouldn't be as important. But since the winning isn't happening, or the competing's not even happening, that's where that's where the grass starts looking greener. Oh, let's go to these other markets, Philadelphia or New Orleans, where he could be a legitimate star and win.
Yeah, and those teams are closer, they're more prepared, you know. And that's the thing that, you know, from Peterson's perspective, he has to understand the team doesn't owe him anything. I mean, they've been very good to him in terms of payment and making sure he's well paid. You know, he's been to the Pro Bowl every year of his career. One of three players to ever do such a thing.
Crazy.
Yeah, I mean, like, the things that he's accomplished in Arizona, because he was drafted to Arizona, you know, they kind of speak for themselves. And so it's one of those situations where this is just a desire, like you said, to win. Like, this is and it's okay, but in fairness, he's being selfish. And I never have a problem with that, because it's something you and I have talked about. You know, players understand, they look at other players, they see other players, they understand that this is something that comes and goes very quickly. The NFL, you know, you can be an absolute all-pro, and then you break your leg on a freak play in Arizona, you know, as Earl Thomas, right? And meanwhile, you were trying to hold out for more money. And so if a guy wants to win, if a guy wants to get paid more, like, you and I will never begrudge that. Except it just sucks.
Like, I would almost prefer to say, if this were a contract dispute, I wish at this point, I wish that's where we're. Where Patrick's saying, hey, I know there's 2 years left. I want a better deal. If he were pulling a North Thomas, that would be understandable. No, instead he's like, no, get me out of here. Like, what? But this is the team. We love Patrick and we love the Cardinals, and Patrick loves the Cardinals. And now you want out? That's the worst.
It makes it tough, man.
And with that, we'll wrap up this segment of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. When we come back, we'll talk about some, you know, the other big news that we haven't talked about yet, and that's the firing of Mike McCoy and the hiring of Byron, or the promotion of Byron Leftwich. That's coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Before we come back to the show, I want to remind you guys of our friends over at Harrys.com. If you want a great shave, I love these razors. These razors are super high quality. You get a great shave, smooth, comfortable glide, and the shave gel is absolutely wonderful. They're quality razors at a fantastic price, and Rise Up Sea Red listeners get a great offer, a trial offer, by going to harrys.com/seared. The quality is not an issue. I told you I've made the switch from I used electric blade razor for years. Before that, I used the expensive blades. I never wanted to use the disposable blade. So this is the perfect mix between the two. You get the quality that you would get from the name brands, and you get a price that is something you'll love. Rather than the $4 per blade or more, you get them direct shipped directly to your house at $2 a blade. And the quality is fantastic. The factory that Harry's bought is a factory that's been making high-quality blades, some of the highest quality blades in the world, for over 95 years. So here's the offer that our listeners have. Get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need. It comes with the handle, comes with the 5-blade razor, comes with the lubricating strip and trimmer blade. You get the shave gel that I love. You get the travel blade cover. And how do you do it? Listeners of the show can redeem their set at harrys.com/cred. So go to harrys.com/cred, redeem the offer, test out the razor, you'll love it, and let them know that I sent you to support the show. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, and let's talk about the change on the coaching staff. Mike McCoy is gone. Byron Leftwich is now in charge of the offense. And what can we expect now? After the showing on Thursday night, you knew it was inevitable. The reports are that it wouldn't have mattered what had happened against Denver. The move was coming, and it was the perfect time because they had the mini bye, one game against a 49ers team that isn't the strongest, and then the real bye. So if the firing was going to happen, it was going to happen at the perfect time. But what was just pathetic was the showing offensively. And not only that, the communication on offense. I think that was more damning among everything else, is that there were issues of football operations, as Steve Wilks called it, of getting the play into Josh Rosen, and that the players didn't know where they were supposed to be.
Right, and that's what the biggest issue's been, right? Like, how are we in week 7 of the NFL season and you're taking a timeout on the second play of the game? And then, you know, we've talked about this quite a bit. They had multiple play of game penalties in the first half of the season. And that's a veteran offensive coordinator and a veteran quarterback. This wasn't a rookie and a new OC. These are veterans. And so what it shows is that there was issues from the jump with what Mike McCoy was wanting to do. So it had little to do with the players, or it had everything to do with the players, and Mike McCoy didn't know how to adjust. And again, that just falls on Mike McCoy, the offensive coordinator. So whether or not the play calls or this or that were bad, like the fact that they were having this issue in week 7 of the NFL season, in Josh Rosen's fourth start as quarterback, it just shows you that there was a more overarching issue than just the play calls itself.
Right. And you can kind of glean some of the things based on the comments, because when Steve Wilks hired Mike McCoy, and he said this when he introduced his coordinators, that he hires coaches to let them do their job. Now, obviously, he expects them to do things in the purvey of their responsibilities under the expectations that he has as a head coach. But listen, let's think about some of the things that Steve Wilks has had. We need to get David Johnson involved. We need to get him in space, use him out wide more. We have Chase Edmonds and David Johnson on the field at the same time. Get him involved in the passing. These are all things that Wilks said publicly, which means those were conversations that he had with McCoy. And then we get to the game and we don't see it, which tells me this was building up, and he was going, and Wilks was going to let McCoy do what he was going to do, because that's what he hired McCoy to do. He would be involved. He would be aware on the game planning, but he was going to let McCoy run the offense much the way he's going to let Mal Holcomb run the defense. The problem was McCoy didn't have the same vision, and you know what we saw were all the lovely Tecmo Bowl memes were, you know, those simple plays of running up the middle and three routes, and that was it. And at that point, what could you do? You couldn't keep him on any longer, because obviously everything is bad. And on top of that, there was no running game. There was no protection. You know, the Cardinals quarterbacks have been hit 110 times in 7 games. That's the worst in the league, and that's absolutely what you don't want, especially when you have a rookie quarterback.
No, and that's the thing, is like, there's simplistic changes, and I know this is like arrogant to talk like this, but there's simplistic changes that could have been made that McCoy just absolutely refused to make week in and week out. And it just, every week you're like, why is he not making this move? Like, why is this a continued thing where every week the question is, you know, what is going on with the Cardinals offense? Why aren't they putting players in position to make plays or you know, have a better chance to succeed? Instead, we're going back to the well of like, oh, let's run David Johnson up the middle. Oh, let's run these long developing routes and get a bunch of guys into space. And it's like, and then they go simple on the first play of the game, you know, a simple play action pass, deep pass to Christian Kirk from Josh Rosen on the first play of the game in San Francisco. And then it looked like they had no idea what to do from there then on out. And so that is what the concern is. It's like, it's obvious that you have the plays in there. It's just a refusal to use them.
So that brings us. So Mike McCoy's gone. Cheer Cardinals fans. Those of you who are ready for that. Now it's Byron Leftwich. He is, Bruce Arians raved about him. He is supposedly some sort of rising star, but he is in technically only in his second year as a coach. He was a coaching intern in 2016 as an assistant quarterbacks coach intern, quarterbacks coach last year, quarterbacks coach this year. Now he's the offensive coordinator and play caller. There's a big, big bunch of unknown that we have moving forward now. We have no idea if any of this is going to improve at all.
No, but the thing is this, that there are things we do know. The first thing we do know is that Byron Leftwich comes from good stock, right? Like, he's from the Bruce Arians wing. He knows how to call games. We don't know if he knows how to call games. What we do know is that he has an offense that works because he was, again, under Bruce Arians. Like, he's been under a guy that's been very successful in the NFL. He's learned from him, but he's also a little more innovative than Arians, right? Like, he's willing to be a little more aggressive and spread things out and run those RPOs and things of that nature. So all of that plays to the, you know, the ability for the for Byron to do different things. And the other thing is this, and to me, this might be the most important, that Josh Rosen and Byron Leftwich really seem like they have a good rapport with one another.
And that's critical. I mean, now granted, some people talked about, well, you know, when Rosen got off the field, he went to Byron before he went to McCoy. I don't know if there's much to read into that other than the fact that, well, Byron's his quarterback's coach. And so depends on what that conversation was. Now, he does come with a bit of a mandate, if we were going to say. So maybe we will see more of what Steve Wilks intended on in the beginning. And just Mike McCoy had his, and Mike McCoy was allowed to do what he wanted to do. And he did it because he's been doing this longer than Steve Wilks has, for whatever reason. Because Steve Wilks talked about wanting to be a running team, able to run the ball. And so he basically talked about you want to improve and get more out of David Johnson, you know, get more and more roles for him, and to improve the protections. Specifically, he said that we're going to have to max things up, meaning more blockers in. Now, did you hear it? Because I saw it on Twitter. I didn't hear it on the radio. And when I went back to listen to it on the radio show, in the afternoon show, that is it true? Did you hear where it was said that the two touchdowns for the two touchdown plays against the Bears were actually plays by Byron Leftwich?
That's what I've read that.
Heard it. I just saw it on Twitter.
And I want to know where it comes from, because it's a really interesting thing.
But I will point out, let's look at the five touchdown passes that the Cardinals had this season. And three I can remember, like the three I remember exactly what they are. The two touchdown passes that came against the Bears with Sam Bradford, and then the first touchdown pass the game against the 49ers. Those three touchdowns came with multiple, they did not have all five eligible skill players in routes. The Ricky Seals Jones touchdown, that was a jumbo package. That was a three tight end set that fooled everyone, clearly. And it was fooled everyone. The David Johnson seam play, that when Bradford hit Johnson for the second touchdown, while that was a more traditional formation, it was only really three guys running routes initially. The tight end stayed in. I think it was Gresham on that play. I can't remember if it was Gresham or Seals Jones. He stayed in the block. And even Larry Fitzgerald chipped before going onto a route. So it wasn't just a five protection. And then obviously the pass, the play action pass, deep throw to Christian Kirk, same thing. That was a max protect situation. And so we've seen the Cardinals have success with, and not every quarterback loves this. Not every coach believes in this. You know, Kurt Warner was not one. He always wanted all five skill players out because he would prefer to have hots. But, you know, Steve Wilks is saying, we've got to max at the protection. We can't just leave our five linemen. We're going to have to give them help. Especially with the health issues that they're having right now, we're going to have to give them help. We're going to have to move Rosen around. We're going to have to, you know, do some boots, get him out of the pocket, and we're going to have to get David Johnson in a variety of things. So hearing that from Wilks, let's see now if that actually translates to a game plan this week, because when we heard Wilks talk before, it didn't happen on game days.
Right, and that, I think you kind of hit that on the head, and I don't remember, did we talk about that on the show, or was that before we started the show, where we wondered if that was starting to sour the relationship, where you're asking, and maybe, you know, obviously we don't know, but like maybe there wasn't a direct ask by Wilks of like, hey, Mike, do this more. But it sure does seem like it when he's talking to the media and he's saying to the media, like, hey, we're going to do it. I'd like to see a little more of this, a little more of that, and yada, yada, yada. And then it doesn't happen. And it's like, all right. So, but again, Mike McCoy does say he doesn't listen or read or do anything like that. So, maybe Wilkes never directly asked him. And then because Mike doesn't turn on the radio or watch anything, he was like, oh, I didn't even know that was that he wanted to do that. That's my bad. So, you know, it's a little too little too late, but it is unfortunate because the pairing from the beginning made sense. Even if you and I don't think we were ever 100% like, oh, this is going to work. But I think we knew the limitations of Mike McCoy's offense. I just, like I said last week, the pairing made sense from hey, we want somebody with a little experience to be behind him, but it didn't make sense from the, hey, we want to run the football. It's like, well, then go find a guy that has led successful offenses with a running game. Like, what's the guy that was, you know, Greg Roman, you know, what's he doing right now? Like, you know, at least he had a great offense running the football with, you know, the San Francisco 49ers. So, you know, those are simple things that you and I didn't necessarily understand. And obviously we happen to be right about that. And it's unfortunate that we were right, because you never want anybody to get fired. Like, that's just the reality. Right. Like, we will say things like, oh, he needs to go. But in our heart of hearts, we don't want anybody to lose their job.
No, I mean, that's their job. Now, granted, it's different than the players, because Mike McCoy will continue to get paid through the duration of his contract, which, good for him. Now, the one thing that's interesting here, this is a thing that I kind of thought about over a little while, and this is the fact that it was an interesting pairing because there was no connection, no previous crossing of paths between Steve Wilkes and Mike McCoy. It's a little bit different than, say, you know, Bruce Arians, when the guys that he brought on his staff, almost all of them were his guys. So yeah. Amos Jones, his guy. Harold Goodwin, his guy. Todd Bowles, his guy. And like, when they said he wanted, you know, he, even though Ray Horton was the guy he'd coached with, wasn't his guy. He was bringing Todd Bowles, and that's what didn't get him the job with the Bears. And so he was fiercely defensive of those guys. McCoy doesn't have a connection. So he was an OC that he went and basically got. He was available, he applied, he interviewed. Wilkes was impressed with him, but didn't have any previous connection to. My guess is that with Al Holcomb, that this will never be something that happens, because Al is his guy.
And maybe Ray Brown as well.
That's true. But it was interesting because Leftwich was Arians' guy. He was a guy that Arians coaxed into coaching. And I can't wait to see how much of that offense looks like Arians and how much of it looks like what we are, you know, kind of how much of it is going to be that max protect kind of scenario, and how much will be Bruce Arians. How much will they run the ball in as opposed to out? How much are they going to push the ball down the field? I'm super intrigued as what's going to be moving forward.
Yeah, and it just gives us something to look forward to, because, like you said, this has just been such a bad season that, you know, now all of a sudden you're looking for things like, you know, oh, let's see how Josh Rosen grows. And, you know, now it's like, hey, what does the offense look like under Byron Leftwich? Is he a viable candidate for as a long-term offensive coordinator? Like, those are where you're at now. And it kind of stinks that that's where the Cardinals are, but it's also the reality of where the Cardinals are.
And, you know, that's about where we're at. So, and with that, let's move on to the next topic as we come back from on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And we're going to look ahead for kind of some comments that Steve Wilkes has said. We're going to look at the 49ers game that's coming up. Can the Cardinals get their second win of the year? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Let's look at some other assorted topics. Perhaps one of the biggest things that people are talking about is is the defense, particularly the rush defense. Now, there's basically two things that seem to be lingering as conversation question pieces that fans ask, that reporters ask of Steve Wilks. And one is there for the, is the run defense? Is it scheme? What's wrong with it? What's happening? And two, what's with the lineup? What's with this nickel base package that they continue to use? Steve Wilks, he's getting more and more. It's getting very, very clear about that it's the system's not the problem. And he says, you know, the bad run defense is about execution. It isn't, has nothing to do with scheme whatsoever. My take, now this is something that has that comment, and I wrote about it a Tuesday morning, that particular quote really rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. I'm going to take a much more, I'm going to step back, and because my theme is, my opinion about the topic is, you can't call a scheme bad until, one, you have players you want in it, and two, that you're getting the players who are there even doing the things that you're asking to do. When we know a lot of the problems that the Cardinals have had thus far have been discipline and execution. Guys jumping out of their gaps, missing tackles. Now, whether it's a skill issue of being able to get off blocks, that might be scheme or talent, whatever you want to call it. But I'm not ready to rip apart the scheme until we see the scheme properly executed, because the truth is, all the coaches in the NFL, we'll exclude Mike McCoy's offensive scheme. Pretty much every scheme that we see in the NFL can and is successful if the players execute it, because all these schemes have been proven to work at one time.
And like I said earlier, I think we assumed too much with this group. Like, we assumed that all these guys were going to fit what they wanted to do. We assumed that they would be, you know, talented and this and that and the other. And maybe in the end, it just was like, and you hate to say this, but like, guys are just not always good. They're not, I wouldn't say bad, but they're just not, you know, they're not the quality of football players we expected.
What's your take on the fact that they run, you know, the change to the 3-4 to 4-3? Is that an issue that you have? Because that really isn't. A lot of fans and a lot of people look at the fact that they ran a 3-4 under James Betcher and Todd Bowles and were successful. Now they're in a 4-3 and they're garbage.
Now, and I don't have a problem with it, because I've always felt like that was the best fit for a lot of the talent. Like, I didn't think that Deion Buchanan fit in a 34 because I didn't think his size would allow him to hold up to that. And I mean, unfortunately, I'm right about that. And I didn't think Hassan Reddick fit in a 3-4 either, because I think he was more of like a hybrid Anthony Barr type, where you're going to ask him to do multiple things and not just be a guy that, you know, is playing downhill. And so I wasn't having a problem with it. I just didn't realize how, you know, beat up Deion Buchanan was and how much athleticism he's lost. And then obviously I didn't realize how behind the eight ball Hassan Reddick was as a linebacker. You know, Robert Kimdiche, the same thing. Like, he's a very talented one gap player, but he's really kind of a one trick pony one gap player, right? He's not a guy that does multiple things. And so when you look at it from all of those perspectives, it makes it a little more difficult, because they're guys that still need work. And so you're asking guys that obviously aren't completely there yet to fill roles that they're not, quite frankly, good enough to fill.
Yeah, well, and as there was a conversation, I saw there was kind of a thread going along with this on Twitter, and I sat down and thought about, because the comment that Steve Wilks is, I still think that changing to the 4-3 is the best thing that we've done, that we could have done, which makes that's a bold statement. But then let's kind of take a look at the players they have and see how they fit, because they believe they were going to put the plan was to put the players in the best position to succeed. Let's look at Chandler Jones. Chandler Jones has been great. He's proving that he's scheme trade. You know, the scheme doesn't matter. He can be great as a defensive end and great as an outside linebacker. The difference is, and Steve Wilks said from the beginning, well, if he's a great pass rusher, let's have him moving forward all the time instead of most of the time. Robert Kimdichie, this scheme, in terms of what they ask him to do, is better for him because he's better at making plays when he's penetrating and moving forward. He's just not always being disciplined. Olsen Pierre's the same thing. Corey Peters, it doesn't matter. He's done both schemes successfully. Marcus Golden, that other side, was always going to be a question mark. Always, because of the injury and because of the scheme change. And he's proven to be okay. He's not a problem. He's not an issue. You look at the cornerback situation. Patrick Peterson being asked to do much more than he ever has, and he's making more plays, and he's still every bit as effective at covering. And so that's been successful. No problems with the defensive backs. With the cornerbacks that they have on the other side, this scheme suits them as well. And so you're left with, really, when we talk about the change to the 4-3, we're only talking about the linebackers. And it's beginning to become more and more evident Deion Buchanan simply lost something with his ankle injuries, because when he was out there in week one, he wasn't fast. So there really was no hope for him. And then the second notion is that how they always play the nickel, and Wilks defended that, and it's a very reasonable thing, because when offenses go against base, they're always looking for a mismatch on defense. When you play nickel, you take that away, although you might perhaps be a little bit more vulnerable to a power run. Before people get out, bent out of shape, always going with that, let's consider for a minute, if it's not three safeties on the field, but instead it's Deion Buchanan, technically that's what it always was, because Deion Buchanan was a defensive back that they put at linebacker for that specific scenario to eliminate those base slash nickel mismatches, because he had the speed and the athleticism to get out in space and cover. His health, his ankle, whatever it is, have shown he's kind of lost it.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. And it's one of those things that, again, like, you and I can go and watch training camp. We can go and watch these things. But until you see it, you know, in kind of closed situations, or until you see it, you know, in game situations, you don't understand it. And, I mean, this is something that you and I have obviously talked about quite a bit on the air, but you know, and I guess we can tell people now, but when training camp was going on, you know, one of the contacts that I have that was there quite a bit would say things like, man, Deion Buchanan is really bad. And you and I were like, I don't know. Like,
especially because we were so excited for the notion of Deion Buchanan and Hassan Reddick playing linebacker under this scheme that had great linebacker play. And with Al Holcomb, who was coaching great linebackers, we're like, oh my gosh, this is going to be great. And it's not been great.
Right. And so, like, we were like, oh, come on. And they're just learning a new system. And it's like, oh my gosh, this guy wasn't lying to us. Like, he was actually being 100% honest with us and just giving us, you know, blatantly honest feedback that Buchanan was not very good and Hassan Reddick needed a ton of time and reps. And so it's like, oh, and so, you know, you and I mean, we weren't rude, but we both kind of were like, you know, it's just, it's a new scheme. Like, let them get adjusted. That was kind of our take on the whole thing.
We're still breathing the air of his 2015 play.
Right, exactly. And so when it's all said and done, it shouldn't have surprised us as much as it has, but it still is incredibly surprising.
And then, you know, obviously, there's all sorts of issues with the run defense. Who knows if they'll get this fixed? But looking ahead to the San Francisco 49ers, the Cardinals appear to be fortunate again because they faced a banged up 49ers team, and they ended up losing. You know, Pere Garçon left the game, Matt Breida left the game, and that kind of was the turning point, is that he was running the ball success. The 49ers suffered another bunch of injuries. Breida rolled his ankle again in their game against the Rams. They had Reuben Foster go down. They had Adrian Colbert go down. One of their starting safeties, Jaquiski Tartt, went down during the game. And so you're looking at four starters who we don't – by the time you listen to this, the first injury report will have come out. But it looks like, at least to me, it looked like Breida probably won't be able to play. That's a big blow to them. And then it probably looks like that Colbert won't be able to play. And this is the team that's already down. Richard Sherman. Now they're losing Adrian Colbert. They just keep losing defensive backs right and left. And so, you know, perfect storm. And you've got a team, a 49ers team, that continues to turn the ball over. CJ Beathard, they're just fumble, and Beathard throws interceptions. The Cardinals have, believe it or not, a winnable game. And they managed to win that last winnable game that they had in San Francisco, which gave you a little bit of hope, especially if that first play from scrimmage. Maybe it can happen again, but hopefully they don't have to create five turnovers to overcome their terrible, terrible offensive play.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's what you're hope for. That's what you would like to see. You'd like to see some of the pressure taken off this offense, but in the same way you kind of like to see the pressure taken off this defense, right? Like, you don't have to be perfect. And so before this game even started, and we didn't talk about it because it doesn't deserve to be discussed, but before the Thursday night football game even started, the game was over. Right? Like the second play of the game, a pick six, and the defense was like, well, that's over. Like, even if we shut out the Broncos, we know that our offense is so bad it may not matter. And so when you end up down 21-0 in the first quarter, and 14 of those points are off of defensive scores from the other team, again, it sets the tone for a bad game and experience. And so now I understand why Patrick Peterson wants to be traded, right? Like, when you say it out loud, it all makes sense. But the reality is, like, if this team is putting all that pressure on the defense, it's going to continue to be an issue. But then that's when, like, locker rooms start to fracture too. And it sounds like it's starting a little bit, you know, maybe minutely anyways.
Yeah, that's what you don't want to happen. You want the offense to have just enough success to keep the defense from looking to the other side of the room and say, come on, guys, we're doing our part.
Well, here's something crazy, and I just read this on Revenge of the Birds, so I'm not taking any credit for this. So the longest drive of the season for the Arizona Cardinals happened in week one against the Washington Redskins. It was 13 plays for 75 yards and took up 6 minutes and 26 seconds. The rest of the season, they've only had three drives of 5 minutes or more. The entire rest of the season, they've only had three drives of 5 minutes or longer.
Yeah, I mean, you look at kind of the first Bears touchdown. That was a big play that came out of the blue. The San Francisco first touchdown, again, first play of the game. The second Bears touchdown was, you know, it was after turnover, and it was a big strike. So they haven't, the Cardinals simply haven't. It's been, and Josh Rosen said it, they've been all or nothing. They've either gotten touchdowns or they've been three and out, four and out.
Yeah, and so at some point they have to sustain drives to the point that it gives the defense a break, it allows them to catch their breath, and then they can go back on the field and make plays. And without that, you know, you only get to play CJ Beathard twice. So, you know, if those are your two wins, that doesn't do anything for you, because you're not actually beating a good team. You're just beating a worse team in terms of talent.
Hey, but that's a win. They still got to play the and they still got to play the Raiders,
so. who are 100% tanking, so they can they can feel like they have a plan in place when they go to Las Vegas. I'm 100% convinced of that.
Oh, geez. You know, if you're still listening to this podcast, I mean, seriously, thank you. I mean, we think we have a lot of, we think that we, over the, this is year six of doing it. We think we've kind of developed, not like we've gone from hackish to okay. I think we've gotten to that point, but you know, to sit down and listen to an hour plus about talking about the Cardinals, you guys are the best. And you deserve more than what the team is giving you. I still hold out hope. I will always think to the positive that things will get better. The defense, we haven't gotten through that midpoint of the season. So let's look in the second half for defensive improvement against the run. The offense can't really go anywhere but up, honestly. So whether that turns into wins, I've said, and I said, Cardinals are going to win six games with Josh Rosen. I'm going to stick to that. It really looks like it's going to be more like three wins, but
hey. I could see them getting to four wins, and that's the thing is right now, you know, it's what we talked about a couple weeks ago. Like at this point, you're saying like, hey, can they get to two wins? Like this is a game, and I know that sounds really stupid, but like this is a game that you can say like, hey, this is a game that they can win. So let's see if they can do it. Like, this is a winnable game. Let's see if they're good enough to do that at least.
And let's wrap this up on that note. The Cardinals ideally getting win number two this weekend. And then we can talk about, hey, we'll have a lot to talk about as to, especially, does the run defense improve? And what does Byron Leftwich's offenses look like? So we will be back in a week on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, and we will talk about that stuff. That'll wrap up this episode. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Roop. Thank you for listening, as always, and let's root for Cardinals win and looking decent doing it. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red. Whoa!